I'm Luke.
And I'm Jason.
We're the guys from That Film Stew, and this is our latest review, Dune Part 2.
Directed and co-produced by Denis Villeneuve, Dune Part 2 is the science fiction film that is both the sequel to Dune from 2021 and is the second of a two-part adaptation of the 1965 novel Dune by Frank Herbert. The movie is out now, but if you haven't watched Dune Part 2 yet and you want to go watch it first before listening to our full review, we will be talking spoilers.
Before we get into it, make sure you subscribe and download this podcast on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, wherever you can find us, and feel free to leave us a review.
And follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as That Film Stew Podcast.
So Jason, what is Dune Part 2 all about?
To be honest, I still don't really know. All right. The mythic journey of Paul Atreides, played by Timothée Chalamet, continues as he unites with Shani, who's played by Zendaya, and the Fremen while on a warpath of revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his family. Facing a choice between the love of his life and the fate of the known universe, he endeavors to prevent a terrible future only he can foresee. So we never reviewed part one, did we?
We absolutely did. And I recently shared that review on social media.
That's good.
Ahead of this episode coming out, we absolutely did review part one. Well, for everybody listening, you got to go to the premiere here in Perth. Otherwise, I don't even think you were going to the movies. And that's just confirmed it for me, the fact that you didn't even think we reviewed part one. We absolutely did.
It was weird times.
It was weird times.
Having babies. Were we on break? I don't know.
We weren't, but it was like weird times. It's back where in the US, Warner Brothers, regardless of the size of the movie, they were putting it on HBO Max. So it was like simultaneous theatrical streaming. And then, the movies at that time, they weren't doing the numbers that they look to be doing again now. So it
Part one still made so much money, but madness, considering.
I mean, I'm still shocked that you didn't even remember that we...
I feel
partly hurt that you don't remember the conversation you and I had. Hey, but listen, before we get into part two, but this is how I felt, and from memory, I've not gone back and listened, we're pretty much on the same page. That first movie, overly long, boring, not all the time, but a lot of the time, and what they were really leaning into in those trailers were Timothée Chalamet and Zendaya. So I felt like we were waiting majority of the first movie, part one, for them to actually share some screen time, for them to be together outside of the visions. And as soon as that happened, end credits.
It was like, like a lot of world building. There's obviously a big, rich mythology. There's the book that, these movies are based on, which I'll be honest, I haven't read them, read any of the books. Including this first one, but there's a lot of setup. When watching that first one, it was a case of I got into the movie in the last 15 minutes and then it ended. And then it was like, well, when the hell's part two coming out? Because I feel like it's an incomplete experience. And that's what it was. So we now have the second part. We have the completed, well, at least for the most part, the completed journey of this chapter. So here's me hoping that, I get the bang for the buck. And but I think going into this, what we can say, and I'm going to speak for you because I'm just going to assume you're going to say the same thing, the sheer competence in filmmaking here, and this is the same for the first movie, and I'm pretty sure we would have said it if we indeed did review it, as you said, this man Denis Villeneuve can make and direct and put together a beautiful look and feel. Like everything from visual effects, the costumes, the set designs, the way this movie looks, how everything sounds, the music, the score, like all of that production wise. If anyone wants to critique any of that, they're just poking the bear for the sake of it. There's nothing there to critique. Watching this in the cinema, like, it is scope. It's big, it's huge. There's a bit more action in this one. There's hand-to-hand combat, which is pretty nicely done. I just want to put it out there before I get into some other things that I'm probably going to piss a lot of people off with, but this is a beautiful-looking movie, and it's really well made. I have some other thoughts, but if that's not where you stand...
Before those other thoughts, so far, I agree with you completely. And we would have said that. I will share the link with you for our review. We would have said those
just
things... when we reviewed part one, that, you know, absolutely. And me saying over the long and boring, that was my experience watching that first time. And then again, like the movie just stops. And we, you know, we knew it was part one. We went in knowing this, but at the same time, it was building, building, building. And then the most interesting part of the movie, or one of the more interesting parts of that film, I should say, was the last, 20 minutes. But ahead of watching part two, I watched part one at home this time. So second viewing, but I went in knowing I was days away from part two. I had a completely different experience to that first one. I was a lot more interested because my introduction to this franchise was just watching part one. Like you, I'd not read the book. I'd not seen the miniseries. I've not seen the David Lynch movie from the 80s. It was just part one. So I knew that second time what I was in for, and I could enjoy it a lot more. But just knowing when it ends, I was days away from continuing the rest of the story.
Yeah,
so I did enjoy, and I really recommend watching it a second time. It was a lot more enjoyable, that second viewing. I can't remember exactly, but I reckon I wouldn't have had a high score, maybe 3 out of 5, if I'm honest, on that first viewing of part one. But anyway, I feel like we've gone over part one enough. We can get on to part two. But rightly so, you've complimented the visual effects, the set design, costumes, sound, score, all of that, like, phenomenal. What an experience. Do you know what? I had the thought, as I was sat in the cinema watching this, like being blown away, visual, sound, all of it, thinking, this is what Star Wars should be. And it isn't right now. I'm enjoying getting Star Wars on the small screen at home on Disney Plus. That's fine. Some shows are better than others. But right now, like, Star Wars cannot compete with what we're getting with these movies.
You know, it's interesting to obviously compare to do a Star Wars comparison. Like, a lot of the influence in Star Wars came from, you know, these Dune stories and all that, like this universe, this type of world building in this science fiction kind of arena, this playground. Obviously, Star Wars leans a lot more heavier into the fantasy elements within that sci-fi kind of bubble. But, you know, this movie, these stories seem to delve in, and more than I thought it would, delves into some fantastical sort of elements. And again, just on the back of, I don't have that prior knowledge with the books. A lot of it was unexpected. I thought this was kind of, besides the giant space worms and stuff, which, you know, we all have fun with, there's stuff in this. And I'm like, oh, I'm surprised that this stuff, the movie kind of goes in this direction. But we'll get to all that whenever.
No, but I mean, but that's the thing, isn't it? You know, comparing it to Star Wars, you've always got a pretty good idea of what's going to happen. I mean, there's things like Andor, where it's a bit grittier and different to the majority of other Star Wars. But for the most part, you kind of know what you're getting without having the knowledge. And I think, from what I've heard, this film in particular differs from the book quite a bit and leans a lot more into motherhood. And apparently that's a lot more prominent in this movie compared to the book. So there's changes that are made, but we don't know. this character could die, and maybe this character did die, or maybe this character over here, like something could happen, like things could happen. So I felt like, as I'm watching it, just invested and just thinking, in this film, the story they're telling, anything could happen. Is there going to be a third movie, a fourth movie? Is there going to be a comic book tie-in, an animated series, whatever? No, it's these films. So there's just something about thinking, okay, so if I'm going to watch the latest Dune movie, I'm going to go see it on the big screen. And anything could happen. Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, there is, and I found this out after the fact, like, there is a, like, the second book, which is called Dune Messiah, which is, you know, picks up the next, it's the next part of the story, and we find out what sort of happens next with Paul Atreides and all of that, and, you know, where this movie ends with him, you know, essentially the, like, the Messiah, how that unfolds, good or bad, no idea. I'm kind of on the thought of, I'm thinking it doesn't actually end that good, but I don't know.
You know, I was just going to say, what's interesting is that, so when the director put out the first movie and then people responding to the second movie, it wasn't anticipated that audiences would look to Paul to be a hero. Like, that wasn't the intent. He wasn't supposed to be this heroic figure, but it's how audiences are responding, and potentially that's going to shape what that third movie is going to be. You've got composer Hans Zimmer, he's scoring part two, and the director comes in and he's like, here's the first draft of Messiah. So, you like, know,
he's ready to go,
he's all in.
I mean, the general story of, I mean, I know I went through the synopsis there, but like the core parts of this, of the story, is about Paul Atreides, you know, like becoming that Messiah figure, and you have, you know, like these people at the Fremen, and then you've also got like the ones that aren't really into it. I don't know, like there's all these words, I should have written them down. Anyway, they are so bad at this. They need more convincing. You know, like the movie is about convincing and believing, and like him going through these tests and essentially like proving himself to him, although he seems to be doing it with very little, you know, issue. Every test is like, yeah, no problem, you can do it. Obviously he's been trained and stuff, but the movie's about him. When you get to the end of the movie, he is like they're set to be their savior, and again, how that all ends, it ends or, you know, continues, who the hell knows unless you've read the book. But like on that, I've, you know, in looking at like other reviews and critiques, like people have obviously high praise for this movie. What I found interesting is that some people have been saying that, like, look, if you don't understand this movie, if you're not following or you don't have the right grasp of where this movie's going, it's because you haven't read the book, therefore you don't understand. And I'm like, no, that is an unfair, I guess, stance to take. Like any film should work, should be able to work on its own. You shouldn't have to have that prior knowledge or read the book and then draw. I mean, it's completely fantastic if you've read the book and then what's adapted, what's and that's interesting, and that's a good perception. We get to come into it with the perception of, hey, look, this is a brand new property to us, and the film is telling the story. Denis Villeneuve is telling his adaption, his vision of what he's read in the book, and he's telling us that story. We don't need to read. We don't.
I agree with that completely. Like, you're going to get that added experience. You know, when we review Marvel films, DC films, if we know the source material, we're going to notice the differences, and that might better or worsen our experience. But what I'm really enjoying with Dune is that we're just watching this as like a brand new thing. And I don't think you don't need all that baggage. You really don't. And, you know, people are talking about, oh, I don't know what's happening, it's confusing, this, that, and the other. It's like, well, you're going to get those moments in most films.
In anything.
To be fair.
But I mean, look,
complicated though. Like, Paul, no, the thing is, people were betrayed.
There's a lot of new characters, and
who were introduced. And they've got very distinctive appearances and personalities, and it's well cast. So it's not, is it this person or that person? You know who everybody is.
Like, I can see someone who's read the book, and it's like, you get introduced to a new character, and they're like, oh, yeah, like, they get really excited when they see that character, and they're into it straight away. But us, you know, me sitting there, I'm like, who the hell is that guy? Is he a big player in this? Like, what? Where does he fit in? Who is he? And the movie has to get me invested in that character. So, you know, the movie's doing extra work for me. Like, I've got to get me on board. And that's just how it works. That's how it is. So, I mean, there are a lot of new characters. So as much as the story is pretty straightforward and it's like, look, it's A to B and then to C, and it's like, okay, cool, I'm following. It's all good. There's a lot of new characters, and you're just like, okay, who are they? How do they fit into this? Who the hell's this emperor guy? Okay, there's like this princess girl. She's like a goddess, but like, what is happening? Why is the baby fetus talking? Like, what's going on? There's a lot of stuff.
I'm here for it, mate. And the thing is,
and you're just like, yeah, okay.
Is the baby fetus talking? We know that she's hearing it, but is that her and not the fetus? So do you know what I mean? I'm just, give me more. Give me more twists and turns. Give me more characters. And again, like the cast, I've got to be honest, right? Christopher Walken, he's bloody good in this. I can't remember the last time he didn't go full Christopher Walken. He's so measured in his performance here. And he's the expression that he has, which is his face, to be fair. He looks like that in most things, but he's usually like sprouting nonsense in more recent films, you know, comedies and things like that. Putting him in this, dropping him in the middle of this world, and him brilliantly delivering those lines, but he's not chewing the scenery. I thought he was really good here. Great addition to the cast.
I almost wanted him to, but just because it was Christopher Walken, and you just can't help but want him to do his thing. But no,
I'm glad he didn't. I'm really glad it was a measured performance.
Across the board, like, again, like, adding to the fuel of how well this movie's made, like, the performances, the cast, like, are fantastic. The new people, like, you know, you got Florence Pugh as Princess Irulan, you know, the daughter of Christopher Walken. Like, I mean, she's probably on screen in total for like 5 minutes, if that. But every
she
time
opens
she,
the
I mean,
film she's, later on,
she's
yeah,
sprinkled throughout. She's very much a presence, and it looks like she's going to have a bigger part in the next one.
But at some point, in her scenes, yeah, she like, is. She's really good. Like, yeah, I mean, I like seeing her in most things, to be fair.
I like seeing her, yes.
I do. But, you know, speaking of, though, randomly, Anya Taylor-Joy pops up.
Oh, as grown-up fetus.
Yes, grown-up fetus. Yeah, so she...
In an uncredited cameo, I guess, if we can call it that.
Yeah, it was really weird because the fact she was in the film, it came out just before the release, but they were holding on to her casting for the longest time, and then it came out. Stellan Skarsgård, I mean, what's more to say? You know, I mean, he is just fantastic. He's fantastic. He's a fantastic actor. Like,
he's so good in the third one.
And he can do it all. He is repulsive in these films. Like, he really is, but what a character. Like, and just the whole thing about him getting lifted up by that machine that's plugged into his back, and then all his family, you know, following him. You got Dave Bautista's character, you know, Bautista getting killed. Austin Butler no longer looking and sounding like Elvis Presley. I mean, it took a while, didn't it? But he's finally got rid of that. And he's playing.
It's the hair. Get rid of the hair and he's
he's fade.
And his colour. Let's remove
he's really
all
good.
Colour.
So in that David Lynch movie, his character was played by Sting. I do know that much. But here he is this. And do you know
that
what?
The whole sequence of like where it's like under the white sun or black sun or whatever the hell it is, where basically everything looks black and white,
yeah,
almost, but like more white than black. Like, fantastic, artistically, such an incredible, like, just visual feat. I'm just like, what is this? Like, what is happening? It kind of hurt. It was very bright in the cinema, but like, yeah, again, that whole sequence, like, gladiator type, but just what are you, like, what's going on?
I was so cool.
However, I will say, you know, I've heard some people sound like, you know, like this character is, you know, he's up there with like some of the greatest villains of all time ever put to screen. And I'm like, hang on a second. Look, nah, he's really cool.
He is really good. Yeah.
He's a one note. Like, there's nothing, there's no level to his character. He's literally just a psychopath.
I didn't get that, but I reckon that could be baggage from the book. He's a fan favorite in the book. And again, you know, Sting in that movie, and he is a favorite character. I do know that. And I think this is Butler, like, he's fine. Like, in fact, no, more than fine. He's really good. He's really good in it. But I'm not like, going to walk out of this movie thinking, wow, he's like the new Darth Vader. Like, he's...
his performance is great. Like, what he's like, he's such a menacing thing. But at the end of it, like, what does he actually do on screen? Like, he's basically, like, he just kills multiple characters. He's in a room with, like, you know, like, there's, like, the female servant type characters around him. And, like, he'll just cut their necks. Basically, the point of that is just to show how ruthless and psychotic he is. But there's no, like, there's no redemption to his character by the end of it. I felt like there was no different, there was no alternating levels of him. It was just always just crazy. And I guess, like, maybe that's the point, which is...
And he was a pawn, wasn't he? Like, you know...
At the end of it, yeah, like, there wasn't...
Really crazy, a capable fighter, but he could also be manipulated. So that's what they're looking to, you know, have him serve them secretly. It didn't go to plan because, you know, Paul ultimately killed him. But just the back and forth with Butler and Batista... You know, and like, oh, all of that, just the family dynamic, I really, really did like all of that. But I said, Dinaz, that from watching the first movie again, and then I saw an interview with Josh Brolin, and he's really confused why people seem to think that he died in that first movie. I'm like, well, hang on. I literally just watched that first movie again, and I thought you did too.
He definitely died.
I'm sure you died. And he's like laughing off, saying, I can't believe people keep coming to me thinking that I died. Like, I clearly survived in that first movie. I'm like, I need to go back and watch it again. And then the second movie, he's back.
I'm guessing he's in the second half of that first book. Like, I'm assuming, unless that's a big change in the movie.
I don't know, man. But, like, for sure, Jason Momoa's character died in that first movie, and I thought Josh Brolin, Oscar Isaac, I thought they all died. I really did. Most of the characters.
I mean, Oscar Isaac definitely died.
I mean, yeah, he's still dead. Like, he is still dead.
Like, Papa Atreides, definitely dead.
Gurney just comes back, and, you know, I'm always going to be happy to see Josh Brolin. But, yeah, no, I thought he died.
It is kind of unceremonious, though. Like, he's just kind of there, and then it's like, it's more about, like, hey, do we trust this guy? Like, he's such an outsider, but it's like, well, yeah, so was I, you know? Like, and that's more what they're talking about rather than, yeah, definitely sure you were dead. Like, no one kind of really addresses it. It was just like, weird. Oh, look, I thought you were dead. Nope. Okay. Like, we're good to go. Yeah. One character that we briefly met at the end of the first one, who has, I'd say, a much bigger part in this, although, again, very one note, although I did enjoy his character, is Javier Bardem as Stilgar.
I was waiting.
Seemed like quite an intense character.
I thought that's where you were going. Yeah.
This one, he's playing the comic relief, essentially.
I don't think he is playing the comic relief.
Not a straight comic relief, but a lot of his lines come across quite humorously because his position is he's trying to convince everyone, or he's convinced himself, that Paul is the Messiah. And even when Paul's telling him directly, like, no, like, I can do this because of training, or this thing, or the thing that my mom can do is because she's been trained to do that. Like, don't mistake prophecy for, you know, like, just sound ability, like the fact that we can do these things. And then even he's just like, you know, he'll say something like, the Messiah would say something, blah, blah, blah. That just proves that, and it's just, I don't know.
But that's not comedy. That's not comedy, because what that is, it's a commentary on religion, isn't it? Like, if you strongly believe something like he does and the people around him, of course you can interpret it however you like. So, yeah, I mean, I know exactly all the beats that you're talking about with his character, but that's real life. Like, that happens. You know, people will what see that, what they want to see.
In a movie with such, you know, a lot of it is very heavy. A lot of the characters are dry. There's the drama in the political intrigue and the religious sort of, you know, dialogue and all of that kind of stuff, all the themes. It is good to have a character that, like, is a little bit more, like, flippant, you know? It's just a bit more like, yeah, and you can have a laugh with him. Again, it's not straight comedy, like you're saying, but it's he's bringing
I get it. I mean,
and it's, like, cool. It's a bit of levity in this very sandy, dull world that
I did have a bit of a chuckle with him the first time you saw him riding a worm. Well, that was like just off in the distance. There he is. Just
I have some questions about the worm riding. Yeah. Okay. So obviously I get, like, you know, like they use the vibrations, very tremors, like, you know, like
to call them,
bait them out, and then like you pretty much hook onto them and you start, right, cool, okay. And then it's just basically surfing sort of, you know, practice. It's just like you just get done. How the hell do they stop?
How do they get sharply off? Sharply. That's a thing that was added for these films. From what I've read in the books, you never actually got told how they got on the worms. So that's something that they created for this movie. How they're climbing on top, they've got the hooks, the reins. So I do like that they've added that extra story element. Okay, so we know they can ride them, but this is how. It does get a little less special when you've got, like, heaps of people riding them all at once. It just seems more special when one. But then when Paul does it, he's got, like, the biggest one they've ever seen. And he's, like, the grandfather of the worms.
Again, and it, look, a Javier Bardem line where he's like, no, that's too big. Or something like, you know, again, it's just like there's humor.
But then that's Paul. Mind. Yes, I get where you're coming from. But just with Paul being able to do all these things, I mean, Luke Skywalker, like going back to the Star Wars comparison or modern Star Wars, Rey, although some people get upset about that. They're okay with Luke just knowing how to do things. No, no, but as soon as a woman can do it, not happy. But yeah.
Okay, you're going in with the Star Wars comparison. Sorry, that leads me into the worm juice, like the blue magic potion stuff. All right, so somebody drinks it, it's poisonous to them, they'll die. But for whatever reason, Rebecca Ferguson's character, the mom, and Paul, like, they drink it and they're able to, like, I guess, harness, like, its abilities or whatever, and have this, like, awareness, openness, like, just this abundance of knowledge, and they can just see things. This is where the movie, unexpectedly, because, again, I got no baggage, I got nothing coming with me, this is all brand new. Wow, where did this all come from? I kind of feel like things would have been better if it was a little bit, and I go, with giant space worms and all that kind of stuff, but a little bit more grounded. What is this blue worm juice stuff and why is it giving them superpowers? Like it, and not just that, like not just getting on board with the fact that it's like, okay, cool, this is a more fantastical element. But the fact is, once they've taken that blue, like the blue worm juice, their characters really take dramatic shifts. And again, I get it. Probably like very likely happened in the book and all that kind of stuff, and it's all part of the character's next step in their journey. But I feel like Rebecca Ferguson's character completely changed, and everything we knew about her prior was gone, and we essentially almost like a possessed character, like we were with somebody new. And the same thing happened to Paul, which, look, again, it might pay off and it might work a little bit better in the next movie where things happen. But I just found, like, again, once he had taken that blue worm juice, he was a different character. We were dealing with someone that had, like, ascended into, like, some sort of different being. And I feel like all of his character development or whatever was kind of just pushed aside. And it's like, again, almost like a possession. It's like he was a different character. People might disagree with me. I think that's...
No, that bad. that was my takeaway. For the mum, she's gone. Like, she is a different person. They basically said to her, drink the worm juice or die. She didn't have a choice. So she drank it. So that was her journey, and she was integral in Paul taking it as well. Like he got roped in and he took it, and because of those women with the tall hats, you know, like training and whatever. So I do think that his mum, she's gone, and then whatever is going to happen when the baby's born. But he is going to be on an arc, and he did take some steps, and he was doing things out of character, you know, towards the end of the movie. But that's just a particular journey that he's on. But I do think for her, whatever is in that worm juice has taken effect, and he's lost her completely. And she's probably going to turn even more in that next one with her followers. But again, it's like, do I understand everything that's happening with the worm juice? Not really. Am I on board for the journey? Absolutely. Because, like, hey, here's this new sci-fi. I mean, like, years, decades of watching Star Wars, Star Trek, you know, and other, you know, sci-fis will come along, but nothing that's got the scope of what we're getting with this movie. So, honestly, I had such a different experience with this one compared to that first one. And I was just like seeing it on the big screen, just really enjoying the story, the performances. And I did have the thought, right? I'm not comparing it as like, you know, a straight comparison, but I was getting feelings of Empire Strikes Back when I was watching this movie. And after I'd walked out of the cinema, I was reading an interview with Christopher Nolan. He only went and said the bloody same thing. I'm like, oh yeah, it's not just me. And I'm not like saying it's as good as Empire, but I was watching and thinking, this is how I felt when I was a kid, like watching Empire. Like just that thought. Back then, Star Wars was like, anything could happen. Empire ends with the bad guys winning. And you just, you know, again, like, you know, Star Wars today is a very different thing. But watching Dune Part 2, I was like, oh wow, this is an experience, and I am so glad that I was seeing it on the big screen.
It does have that, like, because again, it's like, and look, it was unexpected to me that the way this movie ended, that it was like, again, I could, not as dramatic as obviously the end of Part 1, but at the end of this, it was like, oh, but then what happens? Like, there is obviously more to tell in this story. This story is not finished. Where it ends is like, and again, it's like, you've got Paul. It's seemingly, you know, if you're presenting him as the protagonist, he's taken down, you know, the Emperor, and he's now ascended to, you know, God mode or whatever he is. The whole thing with Zendaya, which, my God, we barely touched on it, but like their relationship that is established in this film, you know, their love story, the fact that he's now this bigger thing, and he makes almost like a political move where it's like he tells her that he loves her and she's gone, and he's like, he's going to take the hand of Florence Pugh. It's like, it's this whole thing, and it's like, all right, cool. It's like, it's his move. It's his political move, his chess move. He's setting stuff up. But at the end of it, you're just like, hang on. Is he the good guy or the bad guy? Have the bad guys won, much like in Empire? Like,
this is the thing.
Next, like,
the narrative, it was never supposed to be, you know, across parts one and part two, it was never supposed to be like, he's the hero. He's the white knight. Like, he's the good guy. But
he's just the character that was
Yeah, involved. and he's a flawed character, and you know, he's not a bad person. He's gonna try and do the right thing, but I think his character is a lot more complex. I mean, you're right, we've not really touched on Zendaya too much, but she's really, really good as well. And this movie, like, a friend of mine watched part one, is like, I've seen the first one, it was long, what's the new one like? 10 minutes longer, to be honest. It is 10 minutes longer. I didn't feel it. I did not feel the length. I wanted to stay in this world for as long as possible. And because they did have 2 hours, 45 minutes in, yes, there's a lot of moving parts, there's a lot of characters, returning characters, new characters, I thought they used the time perfectly between Chalamet and Zendaya to really get you to believe that over time, and they did have enough time in this movie, that they developed a genuine relationship. I bought it. Yeah. Hook, line, and sinker.
I'll tell you, like, I'll admit, the movie did drag for me. However, I glanced at my time at the time, and we were very close to the end, and I was like, oh wow. So even though it felt like a long time, it was like, oh, we're actually a lot further into the movie. I thought there was still like another hour or so to go, and I was like, oh, we're almost there. So it felt long, but it also went really fast, if that makes sense.
I did think going into it, I'd struggle with the duration. I knew how long it was before I went in, but again, wasn't a thing for me at all, which was very much a pleasant surprise.
I think, like, with the pacing of the story, and again, you know how we're saying, like, on the surface, it is actually quite a straightforward story. I mean, there's a lot of weird things and new characters and stuff, but it is pretty straightforward in terms of what's going on. And I think that's because the movie does, whether it feels like it's happening quickly or not, and like how you experience it's kind of going through stuff at a slowish pace. You know, like, it's a lot of, you know, you got Paul and Zendaya's character, whatever her name is, like they're obviously getting closer. She's like training him. There's those sequences. Then it's Paul doing the trials, you know, like all of that. And it is sort of, it's like, he's doing something. He does it well. Cool. Next trial. He does it well. It kind of repeats itself a bit. I don't know. I just feel like when I was watching, I was like, okay, like, where are we getting to the meat of, you know, the story? Like, where that first part ended, it was like, all right, cool. We're just at the action. Damn it, why did this movie end? We're about to get to, and I'm not saying we needed action. What I'm saying is that, like, let's get into the meat and potatoes of the drama and the conflict and all that. And then suddenly it's like, cool, we spent this time with Paul and, well, let's just say Timothée and Zendaya, and suddenly, okay, cool, now we're going to introduce all these new characters to you, and we're going to have some moments there. And I don't know, I just felt like, as well as this movie was made, it's I feel like it didn't need to be as long. And that's not necessarily a critique, I'll say, like, on the length. Like, I'm not saying it's too long, but I'm also saying it probably could have been shorter, just because there are things that could have been trimmed. There's a lot of storytelling that is just told very slowly. And I don't think necessarily for any sort of build-up of tension. I don't know. For me, like, there was a dragging feeling. Like, I definitely watched this, and it would be a lie if I told you, yeah, I had a blissful, speedy time. I sat there and I was like, holy shit, get on with it. Having said that, though, there's so much level of, like I said, all the political intrigue and stuff, like all of that stuff is
there's
there.
A lot, but there's a lot going on. And I just, I wasn't
throw it at me, like, bring it on. But
this is,
stop,
yeah, okay,
dancing around, guys.
And there we go. That's the different approach that we both had. I'm like, I want to be immersed. I want to spend time in this new world. Like, what's going on? What's over here? Who are these characters? And you're like, get on with it. I mean,
no,
you know,
no,
I watched,
like,
it.
I'm
right?
saying,
I
get on with it, because I want to be more immersed. I want to explore
as much
as possible whilst we're here. But I found it was like we were with Paul, and, you know, like, you know, the Fremen bandits there. Like, we're just there for a big chunk of it, and then it's like, okay, now we're hanging out with, you know, bold white Elvis for a big chunk, and he's kind of just doing the same thing there. Like, again, some cool action sequences, but it's like, but what is, like, I want more. And then it's like, you know, we're meeting, you know, like Florence Pugh's character, for instance, as an example, you know, like, give me more of, explore her character even deeper. Like, what's happening? Like, I'm actually sitting there going, like, give me more. But I just feel like they're just taking so much time to tell the story that they're telling in this chapter. I'm like, I feel like we can get more. Like, this world is obviously so big and immense, and there's so much to explore that I think I want to be immersed, but, like, in a different
I get where you're coming from, but just, you know, Florence Pugh's character, and I think, other than Paul, I think we've both just accepted the fact that we can't remember these characters' names. We're just going with the actors. It's too hard. Paul's easy enough to remember. but characters will briefly come in, they'll go out, but there's more. There's more story to tell. There's going to be more films. I was here for it. I really was. I know, you know, you're going to the premiere, so you watched it in the evening. I'm guessing after a full day of work, whereas I went during the day on a day off. Maybe we were in different mindsets. I was there for it. It was like,
and you know what?
Past it 10 in the morning.
It is fair to maybe throw that as a factor. Was I yawning a few times during this movie? Absolutely. Was it the movie's fault? Maybe not. Who knows?
Do you know what? I watched it at 10:15 in the morning. Didn't you once?
What I need to do is a nice clean. When it's available, streaming or whatever, Blu-ray, whatever. Like, do a back to back, or maybe across two evenings. I don't know, depending on how my life is. Watch the two, do the full experience of doing part one and part two, and really absorb this as one thing. Like, because this definitely is like, this isn't, hey, this is the sequel. This is the second half of this story. Like, the story begins where it begins and then ends with Paul Atreides pretty much taking the Messiah throne. That's this first story. And I feel like I need to experience that almost as you did, obviously just a couple of days apart. But yeah, I think I need to revisit both of them now that I've got a bit more knowledge of what's in store. Like, what am I
recommend
missing
it.
In terms of?
I do. Yeah, what... I do recommend it. I honestly think my experience would have been a lot different going into part two and have it been years since I watched part one and thought it was overly long and boring. I think if that was my memory, and then I just went to watch part two just for the sake of it, it would have been different. Whereas I'd rewatch part one, straight into part two. Do you know what? I think we're there. I think we've gone on. We've talked about it. I think we could probably rate it. You've skated around it a couple of times. But if you rate Dune part two out of five.
I mean, look, overall, as an experience, like, at least from memory, and obviously I don't remember actually deep dive talking to you about it, but this one, part two is a better film, a better experience than that first one, ever so slightly. Like, there is a bit more action. Not saying that that is the winning selling points, but like, there genuinely is. And even like, there's more interaction with characters that I feel like are a bit more meaningful than in that first one. Again, a lot of setup and build up. This one, still a lot of setup and build up for what's to come, but obviously there is a bit more. I said it from the start, like the filmmaking side of it, the sheer competence of how this movie was put together and made and put on screen, like, it gets the full, this isn't my rating, but it gets the full 5 out of 5 for that element. But then when you factor in my experience of the movie, the issues I have with character turns and the fact that it's like, I feel like we've lost some character development and we're now introduced to these almost possessed versions of these people. The movie does dance around a few things. I don't think, you know, bold white Elvis is, you know, Austin Butler's character is actually that interesting. Cool for action and just killing and being like, oh, cool, that's someone that you need to take down. But other than that, it's like there's no nuance levels to him. So as the experience, I'm giving it 3. So I think it's fair to average it out, and I'll give this movie a 4 out of 5. That's the only fair thing I think I can do. And I'm going to stand by it.
It's a good score. And again, from memory, without going back and listening, I do think 3 out of 5 is where we were sitting with that first movie.
Yeah, it probably sounds about right. That first one.
So that was my experience with the first one. And I've not been able to hide it, really, like, talking about this movie. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Would my second viewing be rated as high? I don't know. But just based on this first viewing, like start to finish, again, 2 hours 45, did not feel the length, like the scope of this movie, the actors, like the cast is absolutely phenomenal. It's like it's a who's who. It really is. Yeah, we need to see where Paul and his mum go in that next movie. Ah, oh, man, I loved it. I'm gonna be crazy, and I'm gonna come in at a 5 out of 5. Absolutely going for it. 5 out of 5. I loved it. Like, I just, you know, again, like start to finish. Like, I didn't walk out of the cinema thinking, oh yeah, maybe if they didn't do this or less of that or whatever. Just as an experience, absolutely loved it. And if you'd have told me that would be my take on part two after watching part one, would not have believed you. But I've got a whole new appreciation for part one and part two. Absolutely loved it. Really did. And it's like, it just, even though it's sci-fi and silly and worm juice, not quite like Oppenheimer, but similar, it felt like watching a movie for adults. It didn't feel like the film was speaking down to the audience. And it was just, I thought it was great. Really, really did. So 5 out of 5, going all out.
You did it. You did it.
I did. Well, that's it for our review of Dune Part 2. If you haven't already, check out our other shows, Rewind and Review and Sounds Like Comics. Each of those shows also have their own Facebook pages.
If you missed it, be sure to check out our recent review of another 5 out of 5 movie, Madam Web, and stay tuned for our upcoming review, Spaceman.
The more I think about Madam Web, the worse.
It actually does.
Gets the worse. Time removed.
It really does. Holy Lord.
You've been listening to Luke.
And you've been listening to Jason.
We're the guys from That Film Stew. See you soon.